Welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Hotel on this beautiful Friday morning in downtown Nashville, Tennessee. The skies are clear. It's a pretty day outside. It's very cold, though. Joe Rexrode is here with me. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. Just, you know, been here casually for about an hour waiting for the show to start, and we're ready to go, man.
Attaboy. You're all about just promptness. You're such a professional. I love it.
Oh, man. I do have a car that's just parked right out front, so hopefully that'll just be cool there.
Two wheels coming in. It's awesome.
Basically.
So, Joe, it's a big game tonight for the Nashville Predators going up against the Chicago Blackhawks, and we're going to have Terry Crisp on at 8:30 to talk about it. Mark Lazarus from The Athletic, who covers the Blackhawks, he'll join us at 9:30. But the Predators have had some favors done for them the past couple nights by some division rivals. Both the Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues defeated the Arizona Coyotes in back-to-back nights, which actually has knocked Arizona out of the playoff picture for the moment. Winnipeg jumped up to the first wild card spot with 69 points. Calgary holds the second wild card spot with 68 points. So that race that we've been talking about really between Winnipeg, Calgary, Arizona, Nashville, and even Minnesota has creeped their way up into the conversation as well. Arizona has now played five more games than the Predators have, and here we are on February 21st. Pretty crazy stat to believe there, but the Preds are only 3 points behind the Coyotes with five games in hand on them, so you feel pretty good about that situation. Still chasing Winnipeg and Calgary, though, so a huge game tonight against a Blackhawks team who was hanging around for a while in the standings, but now sit there with 60 points, 8 points out of a playoff spot. It's going to be really difficult for Chicago to kind of claw their way back in. And these are the types of games that if you're the Predators, you've got to find ways to win. And they haven't done that consistently this year.
Yeah, and it's not like Chicago has no incentive other than, you know, tripping up the Preds. I mean, you know, they still have a mathematical chance.
Sure.
They're still technically in it, but they've faded. And, you know, I'm sure Preds fans are shedding a tear to see them where they are again. You know, the poor Blackhawks, the poor Chicago fans. But, yeah, this is a game. This is a game that you've got to get. Tomorrow's a game you got to get. You've said they got to get four. I think it's not disastrous if they come away with three out of the weekend. But the bottom line is, I mean, you got to play better and you got to play with that same whatever it is. I don't know if it's desperation. I think Hal Gill described it to us, you know, why do they go into Washington and play like that?
You know,
and he described it as sort of like you don't want to get rolled. So you have that, you know, like maybe you're a little more careful, you're a little more airtight on some things, you know, simple. So take that to every game.
And you look at the Blackhawks and it's the usual suspects, especially when you look at Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. Patrick Kane, 75 points on the season, 27 goals, 48 assists. Jonathan Toews with 52 points. After that, there's a pretty significant drop-off. I mean, Alex DeBrincat has not had the year I think most people expected to have or for him to have. He's just got 14 goals in 60 games on the season. Dylan Strome, 31 points. So, you know, obviously with Kane and Toews, if you're the Predators, you know what those guys bring to the table. But other than that, there's not a ton of depth on this Blackhawks team. And I think, is where the Predators match up really well. We've seen the Predators at times this year play extremely well against the Blackhawks. Now, they also got hammered by the Blackhawks one time this year. But I just think this is a team and a game where if you're the Predators and your focus is where it needs to be, you got to come out there and win. And the Predators got some good news yesterday. And we're going to talk about this in the next segment more in depth. But Ryan Ellis returned on a pairing at practice yesterday with Roman Josi. And if he is able to go tonight, that's going to be a gigantic boost for this team.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And you know, tonight, tomorrow, very, very soon now, it's clear he's back. Because that's the thing. When you talk about head stuff, you know, a guy can be hanging around. He can be out there skating around a little bit. And, you know, it's like, okay, well maybe he's close. But sometimes it's still a few weeks after that. Now it's pretty obvious. He talked. He was on a pairing, like you said, with Josi. It's very, very close, and that would be a huge boost. And, you know, with the Blackhawks, it's even though they've obviously gone down, and they've paid for all those contracts, and you know, they are not what they were. Just because they have Kane and Taves, it's still there's still like a old Blackhawks field. They still have those two guys. I mean, that's their whole, as you mentioned, that's like their whole team still. But that also still, like, you know, when you're playing them, like the fact that those guys are on the ice, you know, should still get a little fire going, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's because obviously this was the rivalry. This was the hurdle for the Preds to get over for years before they finally did.
And the Blackhawks, for the large portion of this year, have been – I mean, they've improved probably from last year defensively in terms of their overall depth that they have. But they're still not a very good team defensively. You know, the Predators struggled so much to generate offense really of any kind on Tuesday night against the Hurricanes. That can't happen tonight. I think tonight you need to come out there and have some speed to your game, and we've mentioned it all week. It's not even foot speed that we're talking about. It's moving the puck. It's making decisions with confidence. Hal Gill joined us yesterday and talked about that a little bit. I mean, that's got to be something that happens right from the jump tonight for the Predators because, look, I mean, let's be honest. Things have not gone well for the Blackhawks as of late, and you get up on them early. Maybe you see them just kind of fold the tent, and we've seen that happen a lot during especially this time of year when you're a team that is really out of it for the most part. I mean, Chicago can technically still catch back up and get back in the race, but it's going to take a heck of a run from them, something we haven't seen from them all season long. So if you're the Predators, I think you really have to jump out on them early, and they've had some success this year against the Blackhawks in doing just that.
Yeah, and what kind of atmosphere – you know, does that place have right now?
Right.
I don't know, but I mean,
they're still selling out, but it doesn't feel quite the same.
Is it like selling out like the Titans were selling out?
It looks pretty full in there.
Yeah? Okay. Well, that's good. That's impressive because I certainly remember a Chicago the local professional hockey team was. I don't think people realized they had one. And then in about 2010, I was like, I've been a Blackhawks guy all along. What are you talking about?
It used to be pick-your-own-section night at the United Center.
Yeah.
And that changed in a hurry. It's amazing what winning will do.
The Jeremy Roenick and Chris Chelios jerseys came out. Like, these guys are new, right? These guys are on the team, right? Yeah.
Just healthy scratches at the moment.
Yeah.
When you know you see a real Blackhawks fan when there's like a Tony Amani jersey or something like that out there.
Yeah.
Maybe an old-school Steve Sullivan jersey. I'm sure Preds fans would love that.
There you go.
When I look at this game tonight, Joe, and regardless of which goaltender it is, I kind of have a feeling that I would go Pekka tonight and then UC tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But I want to see them continue to build on that because, like you said, Joe, they still have weapons in Chicago. Patrick Kane, he can single-handedly take over a game by himself. We all know that. We've seen Patrick Kane play for a long time. He's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer, and he's been, I think you can make an argument, along with Sidney Crosby, during the 2010s, that decade, he may have been, you know, the most important player in the NHL in terms of what he was able to accomplish, winning three cups during that run. You know what he brings to the table. You know what Jonathan Toews brings to the table. Duncan Keith, offensively, not the same as he used to be. Defensively, has lost a step or two. And he still is probably their best defenseman. So
that's amazing. Yeah, they haven't been able to figure that out at all.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's something, if you're the Predators, you have to take advantage of. We've mentioned that Victor Arvidsson has started to look a little better this week. I noticed his speed more on Tuesday night against Carolina than I have in a while, and maybe that's just because I was looking for it. I don't know. But I want to see continued steps from him tonight in the right direction because if they can get that element of their game back with his speed and the pressure he can put on defenses with that, it's not all going to come back tonight. It's probably not all going to come back for the rest of this season just with how many games he's going to have to play. I'm not sure how completely healthy he's going to be able to be. But I did start to see signs of that over the course of the past week. If he can get up to a level where his speed is a threat again, that can make a world of difference for this team offensively.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And we've been debating, you know, those four guys. We never talk about Duchesne, you know, because I think Duchesne is – I mean, you want to see more production.
Sure.
With all of them, you want to see more production. But with Arvidsson, Johansson, Forsberg, in different ways, they all have more to give. Arvidsson, like you said, it may just be, you know, again, you take a cross check like that to the back and you're out for a long time, that tells me that it's probably not going to be all the way back this year. you know, that can, I mean, that can be problematic. And, when, and then you think about speed. Well, I could see that certainly, can, you know, having something to do with speed. But if you're right that he had more bursts, and he's been talking about trying to find it, you know, that would certainly bode well for this team. They really need that.
They really do. And, you know, it wasn't a ton more speed. Like, he just – I mean, he got a breakaway opportunity the last game. Hadn't seen many of those this year. We know how hard it was to get those of an offense really of any kind during the game against Carolina. So, scored a goal on the road in St. Louis. So, there are some signs that he's starting to figure things out, starting to get closer to what I think we all believe that he can be. But still a significant way to go. I mean, you're used to watching Victor Arvidsson play, and he is one of the most noticeable guys, if not the most noticeable guy, on a nightly basis, just not only with the motor that he has, but the speed in which he plays with that motor. Need to see more from him. Ryan Johansson scores a goal against Carolina. Need to see him build on that. I mean, those two guys to me, and we talked about it over the course of the week. Forsberg is one thing. I mean, in terms of his goal production, I still think he has more to give there, and we'll get into that later. Duchesne, you mentioned. But Johansson and Arvidsson, to me, those are the two guys that have really got to crank it up, and I want to see that tonight against Chicago, because I think matchup-wise, they should be in a position tonight where they can do some damage.
Yeah, I mean, Arvidsson used to be, it didn't matter if he got a point on a particular night, it was fun to just watch him because he made things happen. And he was just a problem. You know, he was a pest, and this is why he takes some of the hits he takes too. You know, I mean, he gets under the skin of opponents. But Johansson, every time the Preds play the Blackhawks, you know, you can't help but think of when he was at his best and how dominant he can be, and Jonathan Toews can attest to that.
When we come back, Preds got some big news yesterday with Ryan Ellis. How long will it take him to get back up to full speed, and how long can the Predators afford to wait on him to get back up to full speed? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Hotel. We'll be back next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
To be honest, it's a hockey play. I'm not bitter at him. Like, obviously, I'd like to catch him with a nice open ice hit, but as I would anyone on any other team. But it's a hockey play. I get where he was at. I get what he's thinking, and looks bad. And the one I did to the kid in New York obviously looked bad, and I feel like I don't hit a lot, and I definitely don't hit dirty. So, I mean, maybe a different player, different thing, but I'm not bitter. Just it sucks not playing.
That was Ryan Ellis yesterday after practice, returning to a defense pairing with Roman Josi, which is a very good sign that Ryan Ellis is close to returning to the lineup. Predators head coach John Hines said he could even play tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks. So we'll see if Ellis is able to return to the lineup tonight. And there in that clip, Joe, Ellis was talking about how he's not bitter about the hit that Corey Perry delivered to him in the Winter Classic. I would assume that even if that is the case, Predators fans probably don't feel that way.
Yeah, and he may not either. But
right, he may not. No, he's no not one come out and say it.
Like, does anybody in the NHL ever, you know, say
not really
that? Yeah. I mean, there's retaliation, but there's like an unspoken thing about that. But yeah, I mean, that was just a dirty play. And I try to look at that play and take Corey Perry out of it, because the problem is anything Corey Perry does, you're going to assume is dirty.
Absolutely.
But I still think it's a dirty play. You know, like I still – and I know Corey Perry was very apologetic and all that stuff, but, man, think about how costly that has been for this team. I mean, it's been almost 2 months without one of their top five players.
Yeah.
Really? And a guy, you know, in a spot that already has been strained, you know, with PK Subban moving on. I mean, it's already been a struggle at times. To lose him has been huge, but to get him back, you know, that's a trade deadline. That's a big boost. That's an acquisition.
It is, and it's something that I think layers the defense core probably more suited to where it should be. I mean, Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi are going to take down a lot of minutes together on a pairing. And Ryan Ellis, I mean, he's going to get thrown right into the fire. They got five games in the next week. I mean, Chicago tonight, home against Columbus, Ottawa, Calgary, and Colorado all in the next week. So Ellis is not going to have a lot of time to get back up to full speed. I mean, he's going to be tossed right back into it. And look, I mean, He's been practicing for a while. He's been skating for a while. And Ryan Ellis keeps himself in just phenomenal shape. He's one of the guys you never have to worry about showing up to camp and not being in shape and not being ready to go. And I fully believe that he's going to be able to come back in and play as smoothly or seamlessly as you would expect him to be able to play. But there is a difference between practicing and skating and doing morning skates with your team and being ready for game action, and particularly game action this time of year when the stakes are so high. I think it's going to take some time for Ryan Ellis to get back up to that top form where he was before the injury took place.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you can't expect just instant boom, snap your fingers and you're back to the same person. Like you said, I mean, I guess you could look at it as a positive or a negative, the fact that they're going to be packing so many games in here. You know, I mean, I guess it's going to be a strain. You know, even just like you said, he keeps himself in great shape, but there is still a difference, right, between quote-unquote game shape
yep.
and just being in shape. But, yeah, all the games, maybe that will speed up the process. I mean, you know, the Preds are going to need that for sure.
We talked about, and we spent, you know, we talked about it all season, the incredible season Roman Josi is having offensively, 57 points in 59 games. I mean, Ryan Ellis was having a pretty good season offensively too, 28 points in 39 games, 6 goals, 22 assists. And when you look at those two guys as a pair, they were one of the top pairs in the league in terms of their production. And Adam Vingan from The Athletic came on earlier this week and talked about Ryan Ellis was like the leader in the entire league in terms of, you know, goals above replacement. I mean, Ryan
Gar.
Ellis, yeah, Gar. I mean, he was having a wonderful year, which is kind of funny to think about because, I mean, full disclosure here, we got out of that game five it was last year in the first round against the Dallas Stars. And I think that was the game where everybody was talking about the play where Jamie Benn just basically shoved Ryan Ellis aside.
Yep.
And the Dallas Stars totally dominated that game. And we got to thinking about that contract of, okay, I mean, Ryan Ellis just hasn't looked right this year. And you go back and you look at his numbers, and they're not bad. I mean, he had a career year offensively. His possession numbers, his fancy stats were fine. But something just didn't look right.
Yep.
And this year, to me, he's looked like a totally different guy. He's looked like somebody, I guess basically, who's just been healthy until the concussion, obviously. But he was playing really well. And if he can get back to that level, that's going to do wonders for this team.
Well, he certainly wasn't healthy last year.
No.
And I remember at the exit interviews trying to see if he would, you know, talk about it. And he was like, yeah, you guys will get something. So I think we all thought at that time, okay, there's going to be a surgery announced. There never was. Then going into the year, I tried to get him to say what it was. He got mad at me for trying, but you know, it's like what exactly did you have? You know, and it's always, you know, in hockey, a lot of times it's more than one, and I think it was with him too. But yeah, you're right. He didn't look right. He didn't look the same. There was the play against Dallas, that was almost like the representative play of the whole series.
Yeah.
How they got just pushed around as a team, but in him in particular. Of course, yes, you got the big contract. Now, the thing that, you know, that comes with that, which I rejected then, will always reject, is the idea that, oh, you got paid, now it's like whatever for right now. That's not it. It's not mindset, it's not desire. But he was laboring and did not have the same burst, I think, last year, the whole year, it seemed like. And like you said, before this, he looked more like, quote unquote, old Ryan Ellis. Which is not old. He's still not old, by the way.
Yeah, he's not old at all. And, you know, you looked at the pairings yesterday in practice. Like I said, Josi back with Ellis. Tenorti still with Ekholm at practice yesterday. And Hamus and Fabbro. Basically what that's done is it's taken Yannick Weber, apparently, out of the lineup at this point, skating yesterday with Matt Irwin. So we'll see if Ryan Ellis is able to go tonight, if those pairings remain the same. I still wonder what the long-term kind of prognosis is for Jared Tenorti playing in the role that he's in right now, because, you know, I think having Ekholm play on his offside is not ideal. And I also think when you look at Tenorti's numbers, they're really not great. And that's going to be something the Predators have to figure out. And if you win these two games, I mean, you're going to put yourself right back in possibly a playoff spot, but at least really close to one. If you win both of these games this weekend. And to me, that's going to be the biggest question of the weekend, how does David Poile approach his defense core if the Predators can find ways to get points in both of these games? Because I think you and I both agree that he's not going to really sell big. They're still going to be close enough in this race where it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to sell big. He may do a soft sell that Adam Vingan talked about this past week. I still kind of doubt that. I think they're going to be close enough where he's more likely to do nothing than he would be to do that. The only move I can really see David Poile making on, you know, in terms of going after someone and being a buyer would be adding a veteran defenseman. And obviously Ryan Ellis coming back into the fold, getting a couple games to look at that and then look at where everybody else slots into that, I think is going to be big for David Poile. It's not a huge sample size. It's not ideal. But that's really the one move I can see David Poile entertaining to do this upcoming Monday.
Well, there's been a bunch of guys moved already. I mean,
there have.
Do you have anyone in mind who would be a fit right now?
That's, not really.
That someone might be unloading?
No, but, you know.
Because everybody was talking about Dylan, obviously.
Yeah, everybody was talking about Brendan Dylan, and I think that type of player would be perfect here in Nashville. But the thing is, I mean, you've got so many teams, especially in the West right now, that are right there. I mean, Minnesota, you could probably make an argument they're still looking to sell because of what Bill Guerin has done so far.
Yeah.
He traded Jason Zucker to the Penguins. He fired their coach. So it's not like you really get the sense that the Minnesota Wild are going for it this year. So Matt Dumba has been rumored to be available. Maybe Jonas Brodin as well. So maybe you take a look there if you're the Predators. I kind of doubt they go that direction because those are two guys – that are going to be high-priced. That to me, is not really what I think the Predators are looking for. So you look at some of these other teams in the West, I mean, everybody's just jumbled up, really, other than, you know, the California teams in San Jose, L.A., and Anaheim. They're all pretty much out of it in the Western Conference. And then you go down to the East, and especially in the Metro Division, where you've got the Islanders, who, by the way, right now, the New York Islanders, out of a playoff spot.
Oh, wow.
And with 72 points. That just kind of shows you how tight – the Metro Division is. Carolina has jumped them for that final wild card spot. So everybody's just so jumbled up. Really, it isn't until you get down to Montreal in the Eastern Conference where you're like, okay, yeah, they're probably going to be sellers. I mean, the Rangers, they're at 66 points right now. They're hanging around. They're probably not going to make the playoffs, so maybe you would count them as well. But I just don't think there are going to be a ton of options out there for David Poile.
Yeah, and it's like you said, so if you are averse to the – you know, to really giving something up for somebody, how many guys fit into that little box of, like, could actually help you, like, are clearly better than what you are putting out there with Hamhuis or you know, even like a Tenorti. I guess Tenorti could go third pairing if you got somebody,
yeah.
you know, with Fabro. Would that work? Would those two work together? Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, that would probably be your top six if you brought someone in, but there can't be that many guys who will definitely help you, but won't cost much.
And you knew this was going to be a conversation this year at some point. I mean, regardless of how you feel about PK Subban, he was pretty good during his time here.
Yeah.
And when you trade a guy like that, and I understand that they made the right move, he's not having a good year in New Jersey, and I get all that. But when you trade a guy like that and you bring in a rookie to replace him, we all knew that there are going to be times this year where Fabro looked great, which he has, and there are going to be times this year where it's been a struggle, which has also been the case as well. And that's something you just got to live with if you're the Predators and you're talking about a 21-year-old guy. Ryan Ellis coming back in can really help, I think, mask a lot of deficiencies. I think you're going to see Yossi and Ellis play a ton of minutes coming up, and that's going to be really helpful. I mean, because, I mean, no disrespect to Yannick Weber, he shouldn't have been playing with Roman Yossi. I mean, he's just that's not the role that he was brought in here to play.
Right.
So that's going to be something to keep an eye on tonight in Chicago, whether or not Ryan Ellis can get back into the lineup. When we come back, we've all been waiting on Philip Forsberg to take that next step and become an elite scorer in the National Hockey League. Do we still believe that he can do that? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the wonderfully talented and beautiful Joe Rexroad, live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Hotel. Joe, we've talked about Philip Forsberg, and one of the things that stands out to me when I look at Forsberg play is just the elite-level skill that he has. it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a guy that's watched hockey for a long time to figure out how good he is and how talented he is with the puck on his stick. And you look at his production really early on in his career, and you think back to his second full year in the league, had 33 goals, 31 assists, 64 points, and you thought to yourself, okay, I mean, Philip Forsberg is well on his way to becoming an elite player in this league, to becoming an elite goal scorer in this league. And since then, he's had 1 year, the year right after that, had 31 goals. And ever since then, it's been around the 20-goal mark, 26, 28, and this year with 18. Now, injuries have had a lot to do with that, of why the production hasn't been back up towards that 30-goal mark. Played just 67 games in 2017-18, played just 64 games last season, and this year has played 53 games, missed some time with injury this year as well. But I watched Forsberg play, especially this year, and I still think, you know what, I think there's another level, maybe another couple of levels that he can get to just because of the talent that I see. To me, one day he should be a 35-goal guy in this league. He should be a 40-goal guy in this league. Why do you think he hasn't been able to get there yet, other than the obvious of the injuries that have taken place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, look, when he's going, he's like a 60-goal guy.
Yeah,
you know?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, he'll have months that you're just like, wow, you know, how many guys are better than him in the league? I mean, last year, you know, like you said, injuries, you know, he missed 18 games and he still had 28 goals. You know, that's, I'm not a math whiz,
that's about
a 35 goal pace. It's, you know, mid 30s, getting close. It's getting close there. You know, you never know, for one thing, with injuries, and we're watching this with Arvidsson. I mean, it's going to be a thing with Arvidsson until he's as fast as he used to be. But
right.
Sometimes there's an accumulative effect of injuries. And I have no idea if that's a thing. The crazy thing with Forsberg is, like, he's 25,
yeah,
which seems just insane to me. But he's 25 years old. So I don't know what it will take. I mean, you know, a lot of his numbers are, you know, his shooting percentage is right around 12, 13 every year. It is down this year. You know, it's 10-8. It seems like lately he's put himself in situations where usually he buries the puck, and he's in this one of those stretches where it's just not going for him. They need it to start going for him. But yeah, I think he does have 40 goal talent and can get there. But the streakiness, everybody's streaky to some extent. I don't care what it is, hitter, shooter, goal scorer, I think he's especially streaky. And that means the other way, too, at times. There are probably stretches that are too long that you're like, what's going on with Forsberg?
Yeah.
But if you got rid of those and then you still had those big jumps, you know, then you'd probably get there.
And to me, he's a guy where you watch him play and the skill is obvious. I mean, I think back to what he was able to do in Edmonton and lacrosse goal he was able to score. I mean, he does stuff like that all the time in practice, and the skill is undeniable. But to me, when he's really going, I mean, he's almost impossible to take the puck away from, and that hasn't happened quite as much this year. I think a lot of that is because the cycle game that he and that line that he's been on for so many years with Johansson and Arvidsson, number one, it hasn't been together as much. And number two, when it has been together, it hasn't been as effective in cycling the puck, really dominating offensive possession, and giving him opportunities to work around the zone with the puck. I mean, there's been probably a little bit too much one-and-done opportunities this year for the Predators that they've been trying to fix. They've been trying to get better in that area. But when Forsberg, I mean, there are times where it just looks like he's playing games out there with the defenseman. I remember a game against Dallas a couple years ago where he just chipped the puck straight up in the air over a defenseman's head and caught it and laid it right back down on the ice. And you just think to yourself, who even thinks to do stuff like that? And I think people see that, and they see the skill that everything that he does takes, and they wonder, okay, I mean, why can't you get up to 35 goals? I mean, I think I've had a lot of fans reach out to me and ask, you know, when is Philip Forsberg going to take that next step to become, you know, get in the conversation with the elite goal scorers in this league? And I don't want people to hear what I'm not saying. nobody is like unhappy with Philip Forsberg and the production that he's had in Nashville. He's been really good, and he's going to be really good here for a long time. But I do think the talent that he has just leaves people wanting a little bit more with his production.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, there are a couple plays he made in the Colorado series a couple years ago that I still, like, I remember trying to, like, I watched them over and over again to try to figure out how to describe them, you know.
Yeah.
They were so ridiculous. But that is also, I mean, I think sometimes it, and again, you can take this to other sports too, sometimes the player who can make plays like that, maybe sometimes you think they're better than they are.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I think he is a guy who can score 40, but I think that's where that comes from, is when you see someone do some of the things he can do, you know, then you're like, well, you're not, you know, those are like two or three times a year things, you know.
Yeah.
Now, for most guys, it's zero times a career things. You know, I mean, he has this extra, you know, twist to his game that just most people don't have. But but again, consistency is how you get there. I mean, that's how you get to those numbers, is by not having the big lulls. But you make a good point about the line. I mean, for really the better part, the way better part of the last three seasons, it wasn't just Forsberg. It was Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson together, one of the top lines in the NHL.
Yeah.
And so that benefits all of them. It certainly benefited Forsberg and Arvidsson in terms of getting scoring opportunities, and I think Johansson facilitating a lot of those. So for various reasons, you know, that's not it's not the situation now, and so they've been trying. And that's, you have to take that into account when you talk about just him, is that he's been bounced around, and they've been trying to find different combinations that work.
Let's go to Doug, who's called in, want to talk about the Preds. Doug, thanks for calling into ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go ahead.
Hey guys, great show. Hey, you guys, thanks, had Doug. Coach Lambert on yesterday, and I think he said something that was telling. And it was subtle. He said, when we get pressure in our own zone, we have trouble making the passes that break out. I don't know if you remember him saying that.
Yep.
When they're pressuring us, it doesn't. And this is a skill thing, and I want to ask you guys about this. I don't think we're that skilled in these short passes for the breakout. I see some of the other teams, whether it's Tampa, whomever, Colorado, they just glide out of their own zone. We're choppy, we're sloppy, and I can't figure if that's a system issue, if we're just not great passers. Talk a little bit about that, because Lambert was hitting on it. I'd love
thoughts. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I did pick up on that, and we've noticed that. We noticed that a ton, I think, the other night against Carolina, and I brought it up to Hal Gill a little bit yesterday in terms of when you're on the breakout and you're trying to get out of the zone and attack going the other way through the neutral zone, I mean, your passes have to be precise, and you have to really know where you're going with the puck. And I think a lot of it is – the defensemen, sometimes when they look up ice and they see, you know, one forward's blowing the zone, try to get the defense to go with them, and then you've got the wingers, the other winger kind of coming back towards the defenseman with the puck, and the centerman in the middle of the ice. Some of it has been they haven't known where to go with the puck. Some of it has been the opposition has done a good job of taking options away. And when you have Roman Josi and the opposition takes some options away, that's fine, because they'll just skate with it.
Right.
But not everybody's Roman Josi. I mean, you got to be able to go have an outlet with the puck. And some of it is system. But I do think the Predators have struggled at really hitting those, like, tape-to-tape passes when they're trying to break out of the zone.
See, I need an advanced stat on this, and that's a great call by Doug.
It is.
Because I feel like it's so much more this year. And also, he's right, choppy, and it's very rarely do you get that boom, 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 like you used to have. But also, I feel like there have been a lot of gambles taken that have turned into turning the puck over.
Yep.
And gone back in the Preds' net this year, especially early in the year. I don't know what that is, but maybe it's just my imagination, but I feel like it's a much bigger problem this year. And if there's one thing that feels different from previous years to this year, I think it really is that. It's like in the defensive zone, the mistakes and just the lack of precision and chemistry, it's bizarre to me. I mean, there's got to be Vingan. There's got to be somebody out there. You've got like four websites, every story with a
there
different advantage.
There's stats that track everything nowadays.
Is Vingan up yet? There's no way he's up.
No.
Yet. Let's call him.
Yeah, the laziness from Adam Vingan. I'm just kidding. I love Adam. He's
actually, is Vingan in Chicago? I don't know.
He is not in Chicago. We are doing the Smash Brothers tonight, Joe.
That's
I'm
right.
Glad you brought that up.
Not messing around with Smash Brothers.
Just a 30-minute show today because of pregame.
Game
tonight starts at 7:30, pregame at 6:30. But you can hear a special 30-minute version of the Smash Brothers with myself and Adam Vingan tonight.
It better be double
nice
intensity.
Nice job setting that up.
Better be double intensity.
It's going to be triple
you got
the
half
intensity.
The time. Okay.
You bring it this time of year. That's what we're going to do tonight.
I like
when
it.
We come back, it's a big final five games for Tennessee Vols and their basketball program. What are the expectations for the Vols? What should they be as we move forward here? We'll get into that next. We are live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Hotel. You're listening to Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Hotel in downtown Nashville. And Joe, when you take a look at the Vols, they've got a huge stretch coming up at Auburn this weekend, at Arkansas, home Florida, at Kentucky, and home once again against Auburn to round out the regular season portion of their schedule. 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the conference right now. What should the expectations be for the Vols down the stretch here? Because there are three opportunities in there with two games against Auburn and one game against Kentucky to get some big-time wins that are really going to do a lot in helping their bid towards the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, see, Robbie, now I help you out by promoting Smash Brothers. See, you help me out because I've got a
team player.
That's right. I had a nice talk with Rick Barnes yesterday. Always enjoy talking to Rick Barnes. He's got a lot to talk about with this team. It's been a heck of a year. So that will be up on theathletic.com very shortly today. But, you know, look, I mean, I think for Rick, there has been a little bit of a – he's needed a little bit of perspective on what the season has been, because it really is amazing when you think about what this team was supposed to be and what it is now in terms of losing guys, adding guys, you know, injuries. Josiah James, I think, would have had a much different season as a freshman, McDonald's All-American, if he didn't have this groin thing that really took out his preseason and then came back up recently. But he's back, and Santiago Vescovi is doing some wizard-like stuff
just
out
balling.
There. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fun to watch develop here moving forward because, you know, there's a lot more that he can do. He's got to get a lot better defensively. And that brings up, you know, at Auburn, you know, I mean, this is a very talented team. Very good team. Also a team that just lost at Georgia, by the way.
They've lost two in a row.
Struggling Georgia. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they're a little bit down right now. I mean, look, this is one of the toughest. Go through the SEC and find who else has this closing stretch of at Auburn, at Arkansas, Florida, at Kentucky, Auburn at home.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's really tough.
But the thing is, if you're the Vols, and sorry, that was a little loud. If you're the Vols, this is what you need, too. I mean, you need these opportunities. You've got to win, not just stockpile wins, because you don't have that many wins that are really going to resonate in that selection committee room. Go win at Auburn, yeah, they'll notice that.
Sure.
Go win at Kentucky, they'll notice that. Beat Auburn at home. Now, even Florida, that's a team that should not be anywhere near the bubble, was a preseason top 10 team, really one of the most disappointing teams in the country this year.
But don't look, I mean, they've won three in a row.
Yeah,
they're 9-4 in the conference now. They're starting to figure it out, it looks like.
They're starting to figure it out, and they've got tons of ability. So that, and again, that makes that game more valuable to the Vols if they can get it. That is a week from tomorrow at home against the Gators. So, and even at Arkansas as a team also trying to fight. I mean, the SEC is just, I can't remember this many bubble teams at this point of the year in the SEC. It has been a disappointing year overall for the conference, but there's a lot of teams that are still right in there on a soft bubble. So the Vols, I mean, they've got to win 3 of 5. And if they win 3 of 5, that puts them at 18-13. Coming here to Nashville, needing to still do work, but if you win 3 of 5, that guarantees that you have gotten, you know, at least one win over, you know, the two teams on the schedule left that are really of value. That's Auburn and Kentucky.
When you look at the five-game stretch that they have here, in order to really feel good about yourself heading into the SEC tournament, do you almost have to win two of those three games against Auburn and Kentucky? I mean, that's going to be a tall task for this team, but I kind of feel like you almost have to do that, because if you're leaving things up to chance and counting on yourself to make a run in the SEC tournament in order to make that final bid, I think things can get a little hairy, a little risky there.
Well, look, if you win two of those three and it turns into four out of five and you come here 19-12, I'd say you would be in the field at that point. You know, I'd say you're right there. Now, you can't then come here and just lose your first game. Now, of course, if you do that also, if you were to win four or five, you know, obviously of high value in this league is the double bye. And, I'd have to look at everybody. But, I mean, that would give you a chance to have that too, which would mean that, one, you don't play in Nashville until Friday. You know, of course, there's games Wednesday and Thursday. You know, Wednesday is the bottom four teams to start it off. But also that means that you would not – like, you wouldn't be playing a risky game. You know, you would be playing a team that carries some value with it if you beat that team and wouldn't necessarily, you know, serve as a damaging loss if you lost it. I mean, right now, you know, I mean, Florida is 9-4. Like you said, they've been on a hot streak. So you're two games behind them. Obviously, you have to beat them to have any chance at a top four seed. But you still also have to jump Mississippi State and South Carolina, who are 8-5. I mean, it's not likely that you're going to get a top four seed. If you win four or five, though, maybe. But either way, if you win four or five, you're in great shape. But, yeah, to your point, Robbie, if it's three – and you could make two of them those, well, then, your profile changes dramatically. I mean, right now they just don't have – they have some good wins and on the road, too, against teams with similar profiles. They do not have enough wins that are going to make the committee sit up and notice.
Well, and the tough part is you take a look at these games, and I want to highlight the three against Auburn, Kentucky, and two of them against Auburn, obviously. Two of the three are on the road, and they've struggled on the road this year. And that's not some groundbreaking thing for a college basketball team. I mean, they're 3-5 in the conference on the road this year. At times have looked pretty inept offensively on the road. And the one thing when you're playing Auburn, especially if Auburn gets hot, I mean, you're going to have to score. And that's something Tennessee has really struggled with doing on a consistent basis this year.
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, here and there they'll have a game, you know, like Arkansas comes in last week and they put up 82 on
right.
them. But, you know, you go through, there's a whole bunch of 50s and 60s with this team. And some of that is, I mean, Jordan Bowden, I don't think they're going to get done what they need to get done if he doesn't get going from three. I mean, he's had, it's just, you know, Jordan Bowden has done everything you want to see from a senior. I mean, defensively, you know, attacking the rim, he rebounds, he's throwing himself around out there. The ball just is not dropping for him. You know, I mean, it's almost hard to watch sometimes. He did hit two against Vanderbilt the other night. But, I mean, you talk about a guy, you know, he's tied for the scoring lead, 13 points a game, but, you know, 26% from three. You know, this is a guy who he was flirting with 50% a couple of years ago. And that gets mental. But if he can get hot, that's where – some of your offense comes from, because they don't have a lot of shot makers. Santiago Vescovi shoots he's shooting 38%, but he also has to run the team. And, you know, there isn't enough shooting for this team. Next year they're bringing in some big-time five-star recruits that are going to hit shots for them, and then they're bringing everybody but Bowden back with them. But right now they got to find guys who can hit shots, because basically they go through John Fulkerson first,
yep.
And then Eve Pond second, which is totally not what Rick Barnes thought this team would be, but that's how it's developed. And you got Fulkerson, by the way, he's been a great story.
I go back to Lamonte Turner and the loss of him earlier in the season. I get it. He wasn't shooting the ball great when he went out, but that was because of the injuries. If you have, you know, a healthy Lamonte Turner this year, I think that could totally transform what this team could be, because there's some great shooting right there when he's been on and when he's been healthy. And to have him go out at the start of this season and not be available for the majority of it, especially all of conference play he hasn't been available for, it's just been really hard for them to overcome that, I think.
No doubt. And again, Vescovi, if Vescovi didn't come in and say, hey, man, oh, you got off the plane? Oh, here's a uniform. You're starting against LSU tomorrow. Like, if that didn't happen, where would they be?
Oh,
they wouldn't be. We wouldn't be talking about them. But Turner, bigger than, yeah, if he's healthy, he's hitting shots. I mean, how many clutch shots did he hit? But also, even with the shoulder, he was one of the best on-ball defensive guards in the country.
And that's still an area where Vescovi is.
Yeah, Vescovi's not close to that right now. I mean, I think Vescovi has the will and the desire on defense, but no, he you know, teams are victimizing him. They're going after him. You know, I know Garrett Mettenwald, the strength coach, is already probably, you know, just licking his chops for this offseason with him, because, you know, they're going to have him much more ready for this stuff next year. But let's see if they can make a run this year.
It'll be interesting to watch, and it'll be interesting to see what position the Vols are in when they come to Nashville to play in the conference tournament here. When we come back, yesterday we talked about the NFL rule proposals of extending the regular season to 17 games and extending and expanding the playoffs as well. The NFL owners have voted to accept the negotiated terms on the proposed new CBA. Joe and I will react to that next and also get into what that means now that the ball is in the court of the players. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad on ESPN 102.5 The Game.